This podcast is brought to you by the patrons at patreon.com. To support this show, please visit patreon.com/KeithBurgun. Hello, and welcome to episode 7 of the Clockwork Game Design Podcast. I'm your host, Keith Burgun. Today I'm going to be talking about grinding, toys, and values. Three different things that are all kind of related. The central thing is grinding and this question of, you know, is grinding good? Under what circumstances is grinding okay to have in a interactive entertainment of any kind? I could come right out and say that grinding is basically never okay in a strategy game, which are the kinds of things that I usually am mostly focused on talking about. But to me, that's trivial, and I think most people actually pretty much understand that, and very few would disagree that, you know, you should be allowed to just grind something, you know, between, like, and just get some in-game power over people in a competitive game. Now, I know that there are some situations that sort of maybe look like grinding a little bit, like perhaps like farming in League of Legends. I would say that's actually not grinding because you are paying a time cost to do that. Like, there's other things you could be doing in that time. At least ideally, that's the idea. And then the other half of it is, you know, and then the other half of it would just be a strategy game that has a lot of execution, and you can kind of grind the physical ability to do these maneuvers reliably. And that, I actually think, is an example of grinding that kind of does exist in some modern strategy games, and that is something to be aware of. However, this episode is not just specifically about strategy games. And I will touch on that again as we go forward. The first thing, though, that I want to talk about is this idea of values and how usually rational, logical, scientific thinking, what we tend to think is that that kind of stuff can tell you, you know, how long it takes to get from point A to point B, or how much something weighs, or even predict things like weather patterns, but can't tell you what to value. And I'm a big fan of Sam Harris. I don't agree with him on every topic. I think on a lot of topics, actually, he's wrong, but I do think he's a good thinker. And, you know, one thing that he talks a lot about is this idea of this, you know, secular kind of system of morality that we all use to determine what our moral behavior is, and thinking about moral philosophy and, you know, what should we do? And there's a lot to unpack there, but I don't want to get into all that for now. The one thing that really does interest me, though, about that whole concept is this idea that values can be determined at least somewhat through logical, rational discourse, argument, and the kinds of things that we think of, you know, the soft sciences, the humanities, in the same way that we can figure out, you know, how to write a better song, which we definitely have done over the last few hundred years. We also can figure out, well, you know, what kinds of forms deliver more value, like what would be better for you to like. This idea is really just anathema to a lot of people I know. The idea that, you know, someone who has come up with a really good argument for something might come along and tell you that you're valuing the wrong things. I think that we rightly have a lot of resistance to that. We understandably, rather, have a lot of resistance to anyone coming and telling us what we like or dislike could be wrong in any way. You know, there's an assumption that your opinion is kind of like sacred, that your beliefs also just are, they can't be attacked at all. And so, you know, a lot of people in like the religious and sort of secular communities talk about this idea how like faith, someone's religious beliefs are just off the table for discussion. Like, you have to respect them just flat out. And I think that opinions in terms of what things people like and what things people dislike also kind of get a similar immunity. Despite the fact that we all are constantly, we fight about opinions, we figure out that we were wrong about things all the time. I mean, I can't tell you how many things I used to like and I used to think were really great, and have since realized, actually, I was mistaken. Like, it's not that the thing got worse. The thing is the same. I was mistaken about the thing, and that happens all the time, and I'm sure that things that I like right now, I'm mistaken about them, and I'm sure that there are things that I dislike right now that I probably should like. And so my point here is that they're like arts and media have value to them. That's an intrinsic property of those things. And, you know, it's not guaranteed that we will be able to access those things, but we can try to access those things by opening up the conversation, opening up the discourse, and by pushing back on each other's opinions and by telling other people, here's why you're wrong for liking X. Here's why you're wrong for not liking X. And you know what's funny is, like, we do this already. This is not like, you know, a new idea. This is what we do. I'm just wanting to bring this up because there are a lot of forces that tell us constantly end that conversation. It's unfair to even suggest that someone should or should not. A lot of people are offended by the idea of should. Well, you should do a lot of things. You shouldn't murder. You know, that's a very easy one. In the same way that you shouldn't murder, although, you know, there are times, there's probably some scenario we could come up with wherein you should murder. You know, we could come up with some, like, totally crazy scenario. And so nothing is 100%. It's not a law. It's just a guideline. So in the same way, we can come up with guidelines for really pretty much everything else. Now, I know that as things become further and further away from shouldn't murder, they get more and more fuzzy and they get harder and harder to sort of suss out whether it's more advantageous or disadvantageous to do a certain thing. But yeah, I think you can, down the line, you can all the way from something as intense and serious and obvious as murder to something really that seems benign, like should you read that book or should you go fishing or should you go for a walk, or, you know, there's all kinds of like actual arguments that you could make for all of these things. And, you know, some people just aren't interested in that, and that's fine. Some people are fine just kind of doing what they do and just get like basically thinking like they think like one level about things. And I'm like that about many things. We can't afford to be, you know, critical all the time about every single thing we do. Sometimes we just got to do stuff, and that's totally fine. But I think that it's good to remember that the more stuff we can analyze and the more stuff we can pick apart and kind of try to get to the truth of the matter on, or a better truth, closer to the truth, the better off we'll be, generally speaking. So, for example, let's say there's some new game that comes out, and, you know, you have, like, two friends, and you're not sure whether you want this game, and you have one friend, and he's saying, oh, it's going to be the best game, it's going to be amazing. And the other friend says, it's going to be terrible, it's going to be bad. And they both offer some reasons and explanations for why they think that. The fact is that one of them is going to be more right than the other. Ultimately, you know, that game is going to have, it may be like just incredible, like game changing, like life changing thing that you can play forever and this just awesome, fantastic thing. Or it may be just total garbage that just really almost no one wants to interact with and just provides no value. Most likely it'll be somewhere in between. But even on that spectrum, we can say, like, even if it's at like 51%. Good, you know, then we can try to identify that, and we can try to say, like, well, okay, the guy who was in favor of it was like a little bit more right. So that's my big thing, and I think that's a lot of what, you know, game design critique and game design theory really come down to, is that we're all making predictions, and actually game design itself, we're making predictions about what will have value. When you sit down and you design a game, you're designing a new game. What you're doing is you are making a prediction based on reasons, whether conscious or unconscious, that this thing I'm making will have value for people, will have a decent amount of value so that it's worth me even making it. So we're all already doing this, and I'm just kind of asking for us to all be on the same page about being honest about that. So it's not really, and I think that because we have a lot of unnecessary arguments about whether you can even say whether, you know, something is good or bad, or whether you can even say someone should or shouldn't play a certain thing or whatever. So we're all making these predictions all the time already. Let's be honest about that and embrace that and just see if we can be more conscious about it and do a better job of making these predictions. Going back a little bit to the moral aspect of it, I do think that value and morality are kind of, there's like no hard line between them. You know, so one way you could say it is, and utilitarians say utility, but one thing you could say is like, this system, this game has like this negative value, in that it's designed to compel me to become addicted. And I just wrote this article, and that's what I'm going to be talking about a lot. I recently wrote an article about, addiction and how these machines we make that are really just trying to get us addicted, called Psychological Exploitation Games. That's the name of the article. And I got a bunch of comments on there, and I'll be addressing those, some of them. Either way. To begin, to sort of start off the whole thing about grinding, I think we have to be able to kind of admit that trying to get people hooked, trying to get people addicted in a drug-like Skinner box kind of way is I would say not moral, but also it's just not a path to providing value for people. I think we all kind of understand this when we talk about like things like gambling, you know, like casinos and people who are addicted to casinos and also like substance abuse, and how, you know, like we kind of all know that that companies that produce, you know, alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, whatever, they want people to get addicted. They are, you know, that's in their interest for people to get addicted. And it's obviously not in people's interest to get addicted. And we kind of, I think we all just kind of get that about, especially about gambling. That, you know, gambling, I mean, to put it simply and flatly, gambling is bad. And the reason it's bad is because it's exploiting people. And because it's really it's like stealing people's lives. It's stealing people's time. It's doing the opposite of what I always say games should do, which is, okay, you've given me a little bit of time. I want to give you as much value as I possibly can in exchange. Whereas gambling is, I'm going to set things up in such a way that I just sap as much of your time as possible and give you as little as possible in return. And get you kind of like hooked into this, evolutionary bug. I think most of us kind of get that that's bad. Hopefully that's not too much of a contentious thing, because I think that from there we can use that as a jumping point to talk about other topics in games and, you know, in interactive systems generally. So I mentioned in the opening that I was going to talk about toys, and I do think that gambling and grinding have the closest relationship with toys, mostly because most of the popular toys, sandboxes, RPGs, all those kind of things that exist almost always use a gambling engine, a Skinner box thing, as their core engine that drives play forward. Probably people who listen to this are a little bit aware of my four interactive forms, which are toy, puzzle, contest, and game. But real quickly, I'll just go through what they are, just so people know what I'm talking about in this section. Toys are just bare interactive systems. We typically call them sandboxes or, the open world things, or sometimes simulations are toys. But basically the idea with the toys, you don't have a goal and you're exploring the edges. You're mapping the edges of this thing. And that's inherently what a toy is. There's some examples of toys, by the way, are Minecraft in the more like, especially in the more creator mode, Legos, Grand Theft Auto is kind of a toy, although it's sort of inherently a toy with like some goals slapped on, which is a lot of video games. Puzzles is the next level, and that's when you add a goal, and it is a prescriptive definition because, first of all, the colloquial definition for puzzle is a little bit weak. It's a little bit all over the place. Like, we call all kinds of weird things. Like, sometimes we use the term puzzle to mean just thinky. Sometimes we mean it to mean abstract. Sometimes we mean it to mean, like, you know, puzzles, like something that's puzzling. So for my definition, which just all it means is a bare interactive system plus a goal. So, you know, take put your clothes away. That's a puzzle. Like, just go put them away. And it doesn't matter how you do it. It just matters that you did it. So it's a very binary, did you do it or not, thing. It has a solution. If you put your toys away or your clothes away, it doesn't matter if you did it in 2 seconds or 1,000 seconds. They're both equal value. All met goals are of equal value. So there's no measurement happening. And that brings us to the third form, which is contests, where you do have a goal. It's a bare interactive system plus a goal, plus now you're measuring. You're doing a measurement of, you know, how quickly you did it, how much you did it. We're measuring some kind of resource and cutting things off at a certain point, usually so that we can get a measurement. So it's like an incomplete, you know, good contests, you never solve them. For example, weightlifting contests, there's no maximum weight, you know, and that's kind of what makes it kind of a good contest. I would say a example of a bad contest might be bowling or something similar to that, where players can just kind of 100% it every single time, because then you stop getting that measurement. If everyone's, and I'm not in on what's happening with bowling, or maybe horseshoes is a better example. My point is, if everyone gets the best score every single time they play, then the measurement's no longer happening. So you want a contest to be sort of fluid and not have an upper limit like that. And then finally, the fourth form is games. And games are contests. They are a type of contest, so they have the same three things before them, but they're a contest of decision-making. And that means that they have to have hidden information. They have to make things ambiguous. So not all of the information is known. And, you know, that's the form that I think that's the form that has the most, delivers the most value to people, to adult brains, has the potential for the most value. It's the most refined, it's the most frail, and that's the one that I'm most interested in. And that's what I usually talk about, that's what I make, for the most part. So anyway, I just wanted to run people through those four forms and talk about grinding and how, because those four forms are all there is. So sometimes people ask that, like, oh, is there a fifth form, a sixth form, whatever? You know, I've been working on this for a while, and I'm pretty sure there are no other forms of interaction. Now, individual games, individual titles or whatever, are almost always some combination of these things. My big message is, I think they shouldn't be. I think they would be much better if they embraced their formal qualities and honed in on those as best as they could. So become the best toy you can, become the best puzzle, become the best contest, become the best game. And don't let if you have other things in there, they're going to be weighing each other down, they're going to be damaging each other, and I think that's not for the best. So that's my big guideline with regards to the forms. But existing games, existing titles, existing like video games, almost always are some combination. I mean, like Legend of Zelda, great example. The Overmap is like kind of a big toy. You can just explore it. The dungeons are puzzles. There are little mini games and stuff that are contests. And you could maybe make the argument that like certain fights with like Stalfos or whatever, those things where there's a little bit of play to them, you could maybe argue that those are game-like. Either way, you've certainly got the first three forms in the modern Legend of Zelda games. So that's just an example. Just hopefully people understand that. I haven't gone through the four forms on this podcast yet, so I thought it would be a good thing to just do. And at this point, it's actually necessary for what I'm talking about. So let me know if you have questions about that. And of course, on my site at keithburgon.net, there's way more information about that. If you just click the four forms up at the top of the thing, you'll get some more information about that. So the question I did want to ask, though, because what I'm trying to get at here is there any area where grinding is okay, where it's appropriate and where it doesn't do a lot of harm? So let's run through some of those forms. So I'm actually going to go in reverse order because games, we know, I've already mentioned that games pretty much don't, there shouldn't be grinding in games because we're trying to measure your decision-making ability. And grinding, actually, before I even get into this, let's talk about what grinding is. And in the last episode, you did hear me explain my position on what grinding is. And, you know, what I'm going to be talking about today is consistent with that. Basically, it's a rote action, an action that's trivial to do, that you can do over and over again, that gives you some in-system resource that makes you more powerful or that makes you in a better position, not because you had a better strategy or, you know, you're a better player, but because you just put in more time and more clicks and more, you know. So classic examples of grinding to me are leveling up in Pokemon and Diablo and things like that. But most games and any game that has RPG elements uses some amount of grinding. So the technical reason for why grinding is bad in games, the fourth form, is requires a good amount of explanation, and I would recommend watching 3-Minute Game Design, the episode called How Games Work, and maybe also the episode about randomness, which I think is 6 or 7. I would recommend watching those because those explain why the end condition is so important. The end gives this one piece of feedback, the win or lose, and that charges the rest of the decisions that you made throughout the whole game. And by setting things up in that way, you have the most kind of ideal arrangement and the most like rich feedback that, you know, helps players understand the system and allows players to access the depth that's there as quickly as possible. So if you have a thing in the game that you can just, oh, well, I can just grind up this one thing and then win because I grinded a lot and my character was really high level or whatever, then clearly that win-loss thing, it's not measuring your decisions. So you're not accessing the depth. You're just sort of, you're hacking, you're basically cheating. So yeah, games, I don't think this should be too contentious. Most people, without understanding all of that technical stuff, they just kind of intuitively understand that grinding shouldn't be in games. And for the most part, grinding isn't in games. The only example, as I mentioned earlier, is that in like fighting games that have like these complicated inputs and like combos that you have to practice, you could argue that just sitting there and drilling those is grinding, kind of. In practice, I think it kind of is, and that's a bad thing. But I think we're sort of moving away from that, those kinds of things. I mean, I think that I've mentioned this before, but I think that the prevalence of the Dota-like games over the old RTS StarCraft things are a good step in the right direction away from allowing that kind of like pre-game grinding. I remember back in the day playing StarCraft and people would just practice, they just drill build orders for hours. And that's, you know, you really should do that. There's no reason you shouldn't do that. You should absolutely do that. And or practice like microing individual Marines and like to get them away from, you know, to separate them from, what were those things? Lurkers. That was a big thing, I remember. You know, you'd stimpack all your Marines and then move them around in a crazy direction so that the Lurkers couldn't kill them all at the same time. Now the thing is Banelings, but which is similar. Either way, my point is that stuff is bad. I think we're moving away from it. I think people kind of intuitively get that grinding is bad in strategy games. Okay, cool. So I'm very comfortable saying there's no place for grinding in strategy games. Contests. So we're trying to measure something. Now, you could have a grinding contest. Like basically what that would amount to is like a who is willing to bore themselves for longer contest, for example, or, you know, any rote action that sort of is grinding. I don't know, who can move as many, you know, pieces of sand from one location to another before they like give up or before they stop, you know, for whatever reason they die or they just get tired of it or they pass out. Who can do that? I guess you could say that's a grinding contest. Interestingly though, I think that no one would call a grinding contest a good contest. I think that most people would say that such things maybe shouldn't even exist because they're like inhumane and they are not a human being using their time in a good way. And this comes back to that sort of value thing. If we saw someone, you know, how do you explain this? Like if you saw a person that was, sitting there moving grains of sand all day for, you know, a week at a time, and they're like getting dehydrated and stuff. You know, it's like you can say, well, some people want to do that, and we should totally just like let them do whatever they want. You know, and I think that's very short-sighted. I mean, sure, yeah, you can say that. Now imagine that person is like your daughter or your best friend or your, you know, significant other. It's to me, it's inhumane to sort of accept that that's what someone's going to do. And so I don't think we need to just like make excuses for things that are just bad for people. It's not enough that some people might like it, that there might be something to appreciate about it. There are some things that are kind of just bad, and those who wouldn't admit that are not being honest with themselves, that if it was someone that they loved and cared about doing that they would be like, absolutely, this must stop, you know? So I think it's a little bit crappy. And yes, so you can have contests of grinding. I think that can exist. And they technically on a formal level aren't a problem, but they are a moral problem. Like, and they wouldn't be good by anyone's like colloquial definition. I guess they might be good in some sort of, they might have a lot of spectacular value. Like, oh, wow, look at that guy. But it's like, we're totally just cashing in on someone's humanity and like just the ruining of a human being for our amusement. And so that's really not good. So I would say that all things considered, there's no good place for a grinding contest. So puzzles, you could have a puzzle that requires grinding. For example, take out everyone's trash on the whole block. You know, that is a puzzle, and it doesn't matter how you do it, doesn't matter how long it takes you to do it, but you just get everyone's trash out to their trash cans or whatever, and you've done it, and you've met the requirements of that puzzle, and that is like grinding. But the thing is, because that's grinding, it wouldn't be a good puzzle. So like, you know, a good puzzle would be something where just the fact of meeting that goal is difficult or interesting in some way, or, you know, kind of hard. And grinding is inherently easy. That's like a key property of what grinding is. So, you know, I think in a useful sense, there is no good place for grinding in puzzles. And, you know, I don't imagine there'd be a lot of pushback on that. Certainly the kinds of puzzles that people enjoy and that people like, those would be things like crossword puzzles or Portal or Professor Layton. Those kinds of things, you know, you couldn't put grinding into those. It doesn't make any sense. It's, you're just putting labor into a thing and it doesn't even care about that labor. Like, for example, imagine if Portal, you know, you had to bring the companion cube over to this thing, but there's like a really long corridor that's like takes 15 minutes to walk down. That doesn't add anything to the system. The fact that Portal like asks you to do that doesn't make you win any better in the way that grinding usually does. So the Skinner boxy kind of thing, you're not getting rewarded for that long thing. It's just like this arbitrary thing. So, yeah, I would say there's no place for grinding in puzzles. And finally, the place where we see the most grinding is in toys. And this one's a little bit more interesting. So the basic concept of a toy is you want to explore the edges of a thing. So you have, a yo-yo. And you want to just see what you can do with this yo-yo. And you want to map out the edges. You want to figure out, like, what are the things that this yo-yo can and cannot do. And one of the reasons I wrote an article called Toys in the Adult Mind, where I talked about how toys are really not that interesting for adults usually, because we're just very good at like mapping out systems like that. We pretty much, you know, you play with a yo-yo for any adult. You give an adult a yo-yo, let's say he's never seen one before, he'll mess with it for a few minutes and he'll be like, you know, yeah, I get it. It's a like a little thing with a string on it. Like I even though I haven't, you know, walked the dog and done all these like weird little tricks, I can imagine them. I can imagine the scope of the kinds of things you can do with this. For the most part, I pretty much have solved it. And so it's not that interesting. Now, that might sound surprising given how popular so many toy like things are. But I think that's because of grinding and how grinding has really the toys. Toys are the most flexible of the forms. Like, you can kind of get away with almost anything in a toy. And that's why it's very appealing to designers these days, you know, who really don't understand the forms. They don't really know what they're totally doing. So to them, the toy as a basis, which they either consciously or subconsciously understand, is a great place to be, because you can't, it's much harder to just put something in and it just ruins everything. Whereas in a game, it's like, man, it's so easy to just, oh, one new little rule, boom, the whole thing's destroyed. That's what I mean about games being frail. And toys are very, very sturdy and they're very hard to destroy. The only thing that can really destroy a toy, as I was saying last time with Richard, is a goal, because that like flattens out that explore the edges kind of mechanic. So yeah, you can put grinding into a toy and you can get away with that because toys are so so flexible and so strong. But it doesn't help the toy, actually. What it does is it just gets people, it's just exploiting something in human biology and getting us into this like feedback loop of just wanting to gather more and waiting for that random reward. That's not really playing with a toy. That's its own thing. I mean, technically, what is grinding in and of itself is not a form. It's not a system. So it's not like there's a fifth form that's grinding, by the way. It's grinding is a particular psychological like trick that any form can do, kind of. In toys, you're most likely to get away with it. Because, you know, what you're walking around in a toy, you're like doing whatever you want to do. So, hey, if you want, whatever you want to do is, you know, play this slot machine, then that's just fine. You know, and so like literally in a toy, you could put a literal slot machine. That's a perfect example of why grinding fits into toys. Anything fits into toys. But in terms of making a good toy, you know, if you're sitting there playing a slot machine, you're not exploring the toy. So I don't think that grinding does not help a toy at all. I can see people making the argument, well, you know, grinding might be something that's there to like help people, encourage people to keep exploring the edges of it. But I would say that if you're really exploring the edges, then it's not trivial and uninteresting. And it's not really grinding. I mean, if you're actually learning, if you're actually exploring, then it just doesn't really meet the criteria for grinding. And I know that there's some fuzzy areas. I remember when I played Wind Waker with the Zelda game, which was one of the last Zelda games that I think I actually beat all the way through and, you know, tried to 100% and all that kind of stuff. But I remember it had a grid of tiles on the overmap, and I was going around the map, and I think I spent like a 14-hour session straight just uncovering all of the tiles on the map. And so there's a little bit of a question there as to, well, I would say actually there isn't a question there. You know, what's funny, that's actually a good example, because I think in that situation, without that like grid there to kind of like tell me like, oh, you're, you know, that's kind of one of those like Skinner boxy kind of things, like, oh, you're at 50% explored, 60% explored, you know, one of those kind of things. Without that, I might have just actually explored the world. But with that, what I actually did was I went to everything and like did some basic stuff that I could feel like I looked at it, and then went to the next tile. Like I really was just interested in getting the grinding done and not exploring the actual system. So that's the perfect example of how actually grinding is destructive to toys, if anything. It's either it's nothing or destructive. So those are the four forms. Those are the only things that interactivity can really be. And grinding really has no place in any of them. So that's what I've been trying to like build up to here, is this idea that grinding has no place. We should never accept grinding. We should fight it at every turn. Anytime we see developers using it, we should like kind of make noise about it and how it's bad, and how, you know, it should be seen as similar to like the way that our culture already sees drug dealers and people trying to exploit people running a casino, anyone trying to exploit people's ignorance and get them sucked into a loop that is not in their best interest. You know, we look down on those people, and rightly so, on those behaviors. And that's the correct thing that we need to do, and we need to enforce that, and not enforce that in terms of law necessarily, although I'm not against that entirely. But I'm just saying, culturally, we need to like all come out and, you know, be unified on this, because I can't tell you how many times people still defend grinding and make weird arguments. You know, basically there's a lot of people who are just hooked on RPGs, and I was that myself, and they just want to make excuses for why they can continue their addiction, and that's what it is. And you know, people use the word addiction a lot in video games, like, oh, that game is really addicting. Not all good games or you know, games that people want to play are addictive. Just because, you know, chess is not addictive. Puerto Rico, the board game, is not addictive. Diablo is addictive. So there's a real distinction that we need to make there. And I wrote about that in that article. I recommend reading Psychological Exploitation Games, which is the article that I wrote about this on keithburgon.net. But grinding machines, grinding applications, they're designed to destroy your time. They're designed to get you addicted, to cultivate addiction. And, you know, RPGs, which are so popular, are really based on that. Like, that's their main engine. You know, there's a lot of great, like, visual art and music and, you know, spectacle. And there's stories that, you know, people get attached to. I'm not going to say they're good, because they're pretty much not. But there's a lot of like content. Let's just put it that way. There's a lot of like content in RPGs that people like, and a lot of it actually is really good. I mean, the music in RPGs is, some of it is just phenomenal. It's amazing. So, you know, there's all these things sort of to like about them, but their real core, the real thing driving them along, is this just basically like pulling a lever on a slot machine. And I think that's something that people gotta wake up to. So I wanted to address some comments that were on the on keithburgon.net and respond to them. And these were all on that Psychological Exploitation Games article that I wrote. Okay, so Vegetus says, "My tentative answer is that RPGs are ultimately not absolutely different than any other kind of game. All games are, quote, exploitative, in that they interact with your brain chemistry to make you feel good about doing mostly pointless stuff. RPGs give you a dopamine shot from leveling up. Strategy games give you a dopamine shot from winning or devising a new strategy. They're not fundamentally different." And I'm glad that he left this comment, because it's something that, you know, people say a lot. All video games are just a waste of time. All video games just suck your time away and are addictive, just noise and garbage. And, you know, there's a lot of people who feel that way. And there's a lot of people who would say that kind of thing. And there's a lot of people who feel that way, but wouldn't say it. And, you know, I just think there's a lot of that going on. And so it's really nice when someone comes out and says it directly. I think that there is a value in pursuing disciplines and becoming good at things. Becoming good at things and pursuing disciplines, which is what strategy games certainly are, requires a lot of, you know, focus and perseverance and creative thinking. And it's a good way to spend your time. It's not about the dopamine shot. I mean, yeah, I do agree that games do give you dopamine shots, you know, that when you understand something, you are getting that, like, oh wow, I understand something, that's great, and you get all excited and happy. However, the difference between that and something that's a Skinner box is that you get literally nothing in exchange for your clicks in Diablo to, you know, to just kill like that extra monster and get that extra gold. You're gaining nothing. And in a strategy game, there's all kinds of things you're gaining. You're using your brain. You're actually having to think, and that is in and of itself. Of value. You are becoming a smarter person, I would say. Someone who's great at a strategy game, that is a thing that just generally like levels up their reasoning capability, their thinking. I mean, we have actual research on this that, like, you know, old people who play chess and do all these kinds of mind using games, their mind stays good for longer. And there's a reason for that. You're using your brain. You're using reason. You're exercising reason, which is like maybe the most important thing that we have. And so I think that's really just fundamentally different from something that gives you literally nothing in exchange. I think there's a lot to be said for just pursuing disciplines, and that's what games are at their best. Okay, Derek Tumalo says, I've been playing a fair amount of Diablo lately, and for me, the grind is secondary to the optimization games. The systems are not as transparent as in Fallout Shelter. I don't know yet the optimal build for my character, or the best way to upgrade my equipment, or even the fastest way to level. So that's another argument that people kind of give. They try to say grinding is not grinding. They try to say, you know, Fallout Shelter, Pokemon, Diablo, that these things actually are interesting. You know, I don't know what to say other than no, they're not. You can very quickly figure out what the best things are to do. And to the extent that you can't, it's totally black box. It's totally like, you know, for example, choosing which, you know, class to play in Diablo or something. Total black box. You have no way of knowing that. And you're going to invest hours and hours and hours and hours. And eventually you're going to find out, oh, well, I guess I shouldn't have, you know, picked that class. And, you know, Fallout Shelter, same exact thing. I mean, it's like, they're like, you have like three or four resource bars and you need to like get those things up. So it's like totally obvious what you should do. But then there's like a couple of things that are impossible to know, because you just need to have like played through it once to like learn these straight up rote facts about it. So, and you know, that is most video games could be described in this way, in that they are consist of only two things: one, unknowable things, and two, totally obvious things. And of course, what we want to do with strategy games is something that is right on that razor's edge between the like things that you can figure out just barely, and that's not at all, that's what, like, you know, where challenge comes from. And that's not at all the case in a grinding system where you're just clicking, you're just, you know, in a loop. One more distinction that I would make between the kinds of sort of drug-like feedback that you get from playing a strategy game as opposed to something that you would get, the emotions you would feel from grinding, is that, you know, something that people do bring up about things that are very grindy and very addictive is that at a certain point you realize that you're playing them and you're not even really having fun. You're not even actually getting like those dopamine rushes anymore. You're just kind of doing this thing compulsively. And I think that's an important distinction, because, you know, people don't play strategy games compulsively, generally. That's not usually how that's characterized. So the, you know, even if we're just talking about fun and like dopamine shots, strategy games are simply a lot more effective than grinding gambling machines and all these sort of things, which, you know, the effect wears off on you and you just keep doing it long after you're actually getting anything out of it, even anything cheap. Okay, Golden Syrup Dumplings says, is there any problem with enjoying things that you understand and know to be bad, though? Quote, bad is in quotes, by the way. I played through DXHR, which I think is Deus Ex Human Revolutions, instead of replaying the original. I guess he's assuming that the original is better. I played through Hitman Absolution instead of replaying Blood Money. That's just weird. And I've been known to put on American Idiot, he puts in parentheses, at the gym for nostalgia's sake. It's kind of weird, given that that's one of their newer albums. I know that these are bad. I know that all these are bad, and I often argue with people about just how bad they are. But if, parentheses, for a small amount of time they provide some enjoyment... Oh, I guess that was an accidental parentheses. Never mind. But if for a small amount of time... Oh, I see. But if for a small amount of time... close parentheses, they provide some enjoyment with full awareness of what they are, isn't that just fine? And just fine has a capital J and a capital F. I think this is something that people do. They hear other people saying something that they like is bad, and they don't have the courage to say that they disagree. And so instead of saying they disagree, they say, oh, yeah, I know it's bad, but I like it. It's like, if you know, if you like it, if you're getting value from it, just have the courage to say you think it's good and explain why that is. Like, explore that. You know, there, if you actually thought something was bad, you wouldn't be compelled to listen to it, to interact with it. You know, that's a weird, dishonest, and kind of like scaredy thing that people do. I think it's like a defense mechanism. It's okay to disagree with other people about what is good and what is bad. It makes no sense. I don't know what you mean by bad if you're saying you like things that are bad. That doesn't make any sense. We got to like define our terms. Bad means like low value or no value. Okay, that's, let's just start there. So if it has no value, why would you listen to it? So obviously it has some value, you know, or else you wouldn't be listening to it. So why don't you figure out what that value is? Maybe the people who say it's bad, they're wrong. You know, that could happen. I do like, the one thing I like about this crappy meme is that it does seem to accept the concept of like, there are things that are objectively actually better and worse than other things. And I like that. But the problem is that people sort of just like blindly, people sort of feel like it's not debatable. And it totally is. The things that are bad, you know, like everyone says like, oh, Nickelback's bad or something. And that's something that we can debate and discuss, you know? You don't just have to accept it just because someone that you thought sounded smart said it was so, you know? So I think a lot of people feel that way. It's like science, you know, science has answers, you know, like there are certain things that we say are true and certain things that we say are false. However, all of those things are still things that you need to like understand. And you know what, when you go to understand the theory of gravity or whatever, maybe you'll figure out, oh man, this is wrong in some way. Like you need to, everyone needs to be like critical about these things. Don't just accept what other people tell you. Okay. Secret Library says, what? Question mark. Mystery Dungeon is a Mystery Dungeon game, aka a roguelike, like, you know, that one game you made. Surely you aren't saying roguelikes are Skinner boxes. No, I totally am saying roguelikes are Skinner boxes, and I've played a ton of Sheeran, and I think that he brought it up because I mentioned it in the article. But, and obviously I did make a roguelike, 100 Rogues, and yeah, I'm telling you straight up, I made a thing that was a Skinner box, and that was, and roguelikes are entirely, like, 90%. Based on just grinding. And it's, people don't really think of that because, oh, they're not persistent, but you know, they pretty much are just, they're similar to playing, you know, slots. It's like, this time, I hope I get some good items. You know, slots aren't persistent really either. So you're really just, you know, re-rolling the dice when you play roguelikes. And I made one of them, and I will openly admit that that's what I did. And the reason I did it is because I wasn't aware that that's what I was doing. I just thought, you know, it was 2008 or so, and I was like, I was just kind of operating in video game language and in video game world, and I didn't think in a broader way about what the meaning of these things are. And that's also another reason it has like a violent theme, for example. I would say that 100 Rogues does kind of glorify violence. Not nearly as bad as most video games, but it definitely does more than I would if I were conscious of that. And, you know, I'm totally open to admitting that I made some mistakes in making it the way that it is. All right, TE left a big comment, but I'm going to read the whole thing because, well, it's not that big, but it's bigger than the others. I wanted to read it because I thought it was kind of important. TE says, I think everyone would benefit from going back to tabletop RPGs, maybe even reading John Peterson's superb tome, Playing at the World, describing the origins and the creation of D&D. To be extremely brief, the goal is absolutely to simulate a fantasy adventure. The adventure part is important. The game elements make it interesting to play, but mastery of the game is obviously not the primary goal. This is what a few earlier CRPGs managed to almost get right. The adventure is precisely what quest markers and Skinner boxing destroy. Advancement in most editions of D&D is incredibly slow, and it's not the point. So I totally agree with this guy. I do think that early computer RPGs, were a lot better at sort of simulating a fantasy world and a fantasy adventure, as he calls it. And this kind of goes to my point of, you know, Skinner boxes do kind of destroy what's good about toys. Now, when you say a fantasy world, people do use the word exploration a lot. And, you know, a fantasy world simulator is going to be a toy about exploring the edges of that fantasy world. How does it work? Like, who are the people that live there? Like, how do I interact with them? Like, what's going on? So it's the same as exploring a yo-yo. There's no goal necessarily. Necessarily there's no goal. I agree that early CRPGs were a lot better at that. D&D, depending on how you're playing, can be a lot more like that. And those are good points. Now he goes on to say, in a way, game design has destroyed CRPGs. Instead of some grand vision of a fantasy simulation, we have tight feedback loops and meticulously balanced loot, which feeds an addiction and encourages people to keep playing, but I question the extent to which they're actually enjoying it. And that's totally true. Everything about that is true, except that he said game design has destroyed CRPGs, equating game design with this horrible Skinner box stuff. That's not what game design is. I mean, game design is a lot broader than that. That is, you know, I understand what he means. He means like the science of getting people to just keep playing. But that's not what game design is. You know, game design is larger questions about how to use interactivity to provide value for people. So he is wrongly, I like everything about this comment, but he is wrongly associating game design, the practice and the discipline, with this, tight feedback loops and ridiculously balanced loot, or meticulously balanced loot, which feeds an addiction. That's not what game design is about. I mean, I'm totally all about game design and I'm completely against that. So I hope that, you know, I understand where he's coming from. He's sort of saying, if we just like left it to like storytellers and like world builder type people, Tolkien type people, we wouldn't have this problem. But because we're dealing with people who are like, how do we get like as much retention as possible? Then that's why we are left with this situation. And I understand what he's saying. But those like retention-y people are not game designers. I mean, they may be sort of game designers, but the circle of game design is way bigger than that. And it's a mischaracterization to say that it's game design's fault. I think if anything, the future of game design has to be specifically rejecting this model. And so that's why I made this podcast episode. And I hope that it was helpful and informative for you. And grinding is bad. Let's just like start there. And addiction is bad. Like there are certain things that we just need to like kind of, let's just start there and, you know, be able to build off of that. Hopefully, I'm looking forward to getting some more comments about this matter. Please let me know what you thought of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please consider becoming a patron by going to www.patreon.com/KeithBurgun. Thanks for listening.